You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Hey, kid. Why do you wear sunglasses at night?
Because when you're cool, the sun shines on you 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah?
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in a hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 110 for the 27th of November, 2010. And I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fantastic, man.
Good. Yeah. And it's kind of discombobulating because we normally start with tech.
I know. I'm feeling really out of place right now. I've still got headphones on. I'm just, the world's coming to an end.
I know. It's just, and it's hot.
It's going to get worse.
And listeners, get used to this now for the next 4 months or something, we're going to be complaining about heat. I will say, for the first time, Josh, I am impressed. We stumped the listeners.
Yes.
Our opening clip last week actually stumped, especially stumped Rogue Sire, who has managed to pick the clip, I think, within the first 2 seconds of it going to air. And I actually had a request in the forum for a hint. And so I gave them a hint, and now that we're on the new show, I will say that the film that was shown in the opening clip of last week's show was the film Grand Canyon, directed by Lawrence Kasdan. The hint I actually said was, there is a tenuous tie to Raiders of the Lost Ark and Empire Strikes Back. Mm. And if anybody did their research, they would have found out that Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote and directed Grand Canyon, also wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Empire Strikes Back. So, there you go.
That one was hard, though.
It was a hard one.
If I didn't know you, I wouldn't have
known. The only reason why I also was very surprised was because we actually mentioned that clip and the fact that it inspired our sign-off about 5 episodes ago. And so putting it in there, I thought, everybody will get this straight off the bat. But they didn't.
Nope.
Anyway, so what is this show? This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. And like summer and the summer season, the holiday season is just revving up now, and we are getting inundated with movies. Now, this is a slightly different season. Summer has all the superheroes, big special effects, blockbusters, blah, blah, blah. Summer, the Christmas holidays is more of the, on the most part, Oscar bait movies. And these are the films where people are really trying to get those Oscar nominations. But not all of them, as we know that Tron is coming out on the 16th. So there are some big holiday films as well. However, this week, in an attempt to keep up with this season, we are doing two films. And there is a chance that we might be doing two films in several of the shows over the next few weeks, because there is a lot of stuff coming out. So this week we're going to review the new, how do you describe it? It's science fiction road movie.
Cloverfield 2?
I don't think there's much connection to Cloverfield. We'll debate that in the actual review. Okay. But the film is called Monsters. And we're also reviewing the new film with Naomi Watts and Sean Penn called Fair Game, which is based on the true story of Valerie Plame. And we'll talk about that one a little bit later. Monsters is going to head us up. We, of course, have some new trailers, a little bit of entertainment news, and, of course, our brand new list of five. But first, listener Geek Betty actually sent me an email this week and said, have I seen this video? Which I hadn't actually seen at that point, but now that I've seen it, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe. The video is actually called Nicolas Cage Losing His Shit. And it's a clever editor has basically put up on YouTube a collection of scenes of Nicolas Cage losing his crap on screen. Aww. Now, the video is 4.5 minutes long, so we're not playing the whole video, but I put the link in the show notes, and I do recommend you go have a look at it. But I have a little sample for you. So here is a little bit of Nicolas Cage losing his shit. I'm going to leave the mics open because I don't think Josh has seen this yet either. And we'll just play it until we're kind of bored. Okay, so we'll let's have a look. Here he is. Nicolas Cage losing his shit by Harry Hanrahan. And you can find other work of his on YouTube as well. He's very clever.
Oh. I'm a vampire!
Put it in the right file, according to alphabetical order. You know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z! Huh?
What am I, a fucking retard man? Am I a fucking retard? Oh! I know what this is. You're trying to stump me up because of this crazy little man you've been around. Well, vive la fucking France, man! Someone's trying to kill me, man! Fucking
hangers! It never just goes away.
The goddamn contract is somewhere in the goddamn fucking files! Fuck! Fucking fucker! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck Mexico!
Horseshit.
Hey, fucking yo!
Okay, I think we can honestly say greatest actor of our generation.
Well, the guy really just says fuck like no one else says fuck.
And what's funny is in the second half of the trailer, he starts belting women. It is unbelievable. I didn't realize, if you actually start watching these clips, how many times he hits girls. It's like this, I don't know whether it's the roles that he takes or if there is something ingrained into his personality that has him swear.
I'm sure he wails on everyone, Dave.
Swears nonstop and hits women. It's like, wow. Wow. So it's so funny because when you watch Nicolas Cage, you know, you sit there and go, okay, he's out. Her performances are outrageous. It's only when you compress them all together.
Yeah,
and just take out all the losing his shit moments. You sit and go, "Wow, he's really kind of out there." somebody's asked what those first clips were. I think most of the first three or four clips all come from Vampire's Kiss.
Yeah, and then sort of a bit of Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah, and then there's that weird mob film he does with the strip club. I forget what it's called. The link that we have on the show notes that we're going to put up actually has a list. A breakdown of every film that's in there.
Oh, I did love the fact that last little laughing bit was him in, what was it, Port of Call, New Orleans. Mm. Oh, that bit is just, that's going in my best and worst case.
Actually, that film where he's got the big mustache and he's playing in the strip club and everything, I actually caught on TV. It was a late night movie on Foxtel about 5 months ago. Yeah. And I was mesmerized by it because it's awful.
Yeah,
and he does the entire film in this bad wig and this huge mustache and these sunglasses, and you're sitting there go, you look like a cartoon character.
Yeah,
what is wrong with this picture?
Nicolas Cage.
There is that.
Yeah.
So I can say that I personally think he's the finest actor of our generation.
He is special. I'm going that far.
Special.
I'm just going as far as special. That's all you're going to get out of me.
I think. Look, we deride him. He's done some good performances, but he's done a lot of crap. The man has done a lot of crap.
Yeah. Hey, dude, monkeys at typewriters will eventually give you Shakespeare if you wait long enough. So
even a broken watch is right twice a day, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Geek Betty. I got that on the email and I was putting together the show and I just watched it and I went, oh, that is just
joyous. Worry for our audio listeners, though, because the music makes the whole experience a lot darker than it is if you're watching it.
I do suggest, and look, we've actually had, let me clarify this as well while we're at it. I've had some requests via email, and you know who you are, those who have sent emails in, about whether or not we are going to put up a video podcast for the people who can't come in live. There's a reason why we don't.
Yeah.
First of all, we want to encourage you to come in live. Secondly, the only video that is being recorded, we don't have enough equipment to actually record a dedicated video feed into a high-quality feed. So the only video that we have is the video that's being recorded on Ustream. And unfortunately, when it's watching it live, it's fine. But if you actually downloaded it and put it onto your iPad or something like that, every now and again, it slips in and out of sync. It's part of being the live stream. And there's no way of fixing that because the frame rate changes because of bandwidth issues. Now, when the NBN comes in and we've got like huge bandwidth and we can put out high-def video like Leo Laporte and stuff like that, our recording of that video feed might be a lot better. But at the moment, I just – as a quality control thing, I just worry that if I put it out, I'm going to get people saying, oh, this is a lot of sync, or this doesn't work, or this, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of look at it and go, I just don't know if it's worth it. What we do is we always embed the week's shows on the site. Mm-hmm. So if you want to watch the live video, just go to the site. And unfortunately, you can't do it on an iPad because it is Flash. Ustream hasn't left Flash yet. But if you're on a computer, you can go to our site, look for the replay posts. And the replay is always the three videos together in one post in order that we record them. Mm-hmm. And you can watch the shows that way if you want to watch the shows. I have thought about putting out a video podcast for quite some time. It's just at this point in time, logistically, we just can't. Unless I put out, as I say, that recorded feed. And it's just not good enough, yeah. Unfortunately. So, mm-hmm. And I would worry about the quality going out. Mm. But anyway, so we will work towards that. And one day we will hopefully have, look, more computers to generate heat in here. Yay! We might do something like that too in the future. But at the moment, we started life as a podcast, as an audio podcast. Predominantly, that's what we are. We are an audio podcast. We happen to go out live because it's fun. We have the chat room and all that sort of stuff. But our finished product has always been aimed at being an audio podcast. Yeah. Okay. With all of that being said, we should move into our first feature review. The film Monsters, excuse me, the film Monsters, I have a poster for it, there we are, is written, all right, ready for this? Written, produced, designed, photographed, and directed by Gareth Edwards. And there's also, I read one report that said that he also had a hand in editing it, although on IMDb, it has an editor listed, so I don't know whether that's
maybe there was a name maybe, or someone went past and re-edited it.
Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, he basically did everything on this show. Oh, and I should also express that he also did all the visual effects. Mm. So he basically did everything on this show. The cast is very small. Realistically, there's only two. There's a couple of other people who come throughout and so forth. But the three casts that are listed on IMDb are Whitney Able, Andrew Calder, and Kevin Kane. They're the three who are listed. I'm not even sure who Kevin Kane played, but the two mains are really our main stars. Synopsis is convoluted, but I've got a very simple one here from IMDb. It says, 6 years after Earth has suffered an alien invasion, a cynical journalist agrees to escort a shaken American tourist through an infected zone in Mexico to get safely to the U.S. border. That's the very, very simple structure of this film. And as we talk about it, we'll talk about...
I think it gets much more complicated.
Well, it's a little bit more complicated about why the aliens are there and, you know, the so forth. But anyway, we'll worry about that. It should also be noted that the film only cost $500,000 to make.
Yes.
Very, very low budget indeed. I have a trailer here. For our audio listeners, I do apologize. There's not a lot of talking in the trailer. There's a little bit. But it'll give you a taste of the feeling, at least.
Back to America.
I'm just asking you to help me out here.
Very difficult journey, very risky, very dangerous. Do you have the money? You take the risk.
Look at this!
What'd you find, Cortez?
What is there?
Okay, so that was the trailer for Monsters. I have to say straight off the bat, Josh, that I think that the trailer is actually better than the film.
I think the trailer probably has more action in it and more entertainment than if you put the film together, because all of the bits in between kind of make it a lot less. It's sad that we don't have Callum.
Yeah, just to let people know, Callum was actually supposed to be joining us for this review because he actually saw the film with us. And Callum actually liked the film a lot more than we did. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Josh, and say that I didn't hate the film.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I didn't hate the film. And in fact, I thought, you know, it's a really good effort, and I thought the production value was exceptionally high for the amount of money that was spent on it. I thought the special effects were really good. The issue, two biggest issues I had with this film were I didn't like either of the lead actors.
No, yeah, I can agree with that.
And it's not that they were actually terrible actors. The dialogue given to them was so inane that you sit there going, shut up, constantly throughout the film.
I just didn't care at all about either of them. I had no interest in the relationship between the two of them. I felt nothing for this whole kind of epic journey that they were going on because I realized very early on, probably about three or four scenes into just conflict of any kind, that I realized that we were going to be watching an M. Night Shyamalan film. So basically, there's a whole lot of build-up and nothing actually happens throughout the entire film.
Well, and that was my second issue with the film, was its pace is like a cemetery. And it's funny because it's one of those films where it's called Monsters, and we open the film with this scene where this huge monster is tearing up this town and soldiers are attacking and all this sort of stuff. And then when they enter the infected zone, you think, okay, around every corner could be an alien and all this sort of stuff. And you quickly start to realize that, no.
Well, I think
there's no aliens around the corner. There's, you know.
I think you put it best when we walked out of the cinema, when you actually basically said it felt like you were on an amusement ride. Disneyland.
Yeah, the Disneyland jungle ride where you sit on the boat and you go through and there's things on the banks.
Exactly, and like things pop up, but nothing ever.
But you're never in any imminent danger.
Exactly, and I think that was. It wouldn't have taken one or two scenes of like actual conflict or something to happen like more dangerously, like bar the actual scene, a scene about halfway through the film where there is just one act of huge violence in this entire film. Even then, I didn't really feel like they were in any major danger. They just seemed to be like in the background of what was going on. And that didn't work for me. I mean, I know that's what he was trying to do. That was the intention of the film, was to take you through this experience and kind of walk you through it and sort of see what was happening. But this is where my reference to Cloverfield comes in, because it's that whole idea that you're kind of just people walking through what is an attack. You know what I mean?
But I'm going to say something controversial here and say that Cloverfield is an infinitely better film, because at least with Cloverfield, there is a sense of danger.
I'll give you that much.
You know, with Cloverfield, I know you hated that movie, but with Cloverfield, at least you felt like at any time they could buy it. At any time there was a monster around the corner. There was danger, there was action, there was stuff happening.
This film, and they were fair.
They wander and wander and wander. And I'm sorry, but as I said when it came out of the film, I have a real problem with the fact that they were completely ADD in the sense that they would go, oh, we're in danger, stay on the path. Oh, what's that over there? Let's go wander over there for a while.
Let's go wander out into ruins and stand there and talk for a while.
It's they just wander off the path constantly, being sidetracked by things. And you go, you're in the infected zone.
Yeah, don't you want to get out of this area?
Yeah, there's no sense of danger to it at all.
And, like, for these huge infected zones that they've set up, it's like there was really... Like, I don't get the conversation of infected, quote-unquote. Like, what... Why is it infected?
I think they try and explain that with the trees and the stuff growing on the trees and stuff at that one point.
Why haven't they just... And just
exactly. Napalm the entire area.
I don't know. It doesn't... None of it really sat right with me.
No, it feels underdeveloped.
Yeah.
Is the biggest issue with
this.
But
like in saying that, I mean, this is the problem with the film, is he's done it on a low budget, he's, you know, organized it, he's created it, and for that I give him so much credit. Because what he did with the money he had.
And the scope of the film is enormous.
Yeah.
And so it's not like an El Mariachi where he goes, okay, I'm working on $7,000 and I keep it to like five characters in one street in Mexico and we have lots of shootouts. You know, you work in low budget, this is what happens. You know, and El Mariachi is a great film for it. But this is a low budget film where he had much bigger budget ideals on this really small scale, and he makes it work.
He makes what he wanted to work, and I completely agree with that. It's really nice to see how much effort he has put into this, and it's good to see that it came about and that he managed to get it launched. And you know, I hope it's a rarity now in directors that we actually get a really a really competent director that sticks to the ideals of sort of low budget working, and just for him to just take, you know, $500,000 and disappear into the bush and film, you know, the film and then do the editing on the fly. And, yeah, I mean, there's been rumors that he did most of it on a MacBook while he was tripping around.
Wouldn't surprise me. There's actually a photograph in the latest issue of Premiere that actually has a photo of him in a field directing a scene, and he's got the camera in his hands, and next to him is a tripod with another camera, and he actually says in the caption, the studio insisted he have a backup camera and this other equipment, and he said, so they took photos like this on the set to show the studio, look, we're using it, but they never actually used it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't need it. He literally was shooting so low budget that he didn't need all this extra equipment that was being forced upon him.
Yeah. And I mean, look, that's what I'm saying. I mean, to get a real guerrilla director, and I mean, it hasn't been that much of a failure, I'm sure, that, you know, people won't look at him and go, this is a man to give money to.
Well, according to Box Office Mojo, $500,000 budget, it's already made $1 million worldwide.
Yeah.
It didn't do very well in the States. It opened very, very small, but it's opening around the world now. And if it's already made $1 million, look, it'll probably clear $4 or $5 million by the time it finishes worldwide. And then you've got DVD sales.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, he's set. The man is set, and I'm glad for that because I think he does have a good eye.
Well, and also, if that's what he can make...
Exactly.
And if you give him a decent writer, you know, and... you know what the other thing is? I think the film fails because he took too much on. Like, he's wanted to be... He's set an ideal for himself, and he's gone...
Well, quite frankly, he wanted to be Robert Rodriguez.
Exactly. He wanted to go out, and he wanted to do it all himself. And you know what? Look where Rodriguez is now. Like, and look what he's capable of now.
Mm.
And I mean, like, for him to do what he's done, really, really good. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for doing that. And it's like, that's what I'm saying. Watch this guy in the future, because he has potential to be a great director when you've got some other people working with him.
He does need to work on pace. The film has, and I don't know if anybody in our chat room is old enough to remember, but it does have a vibe. There was a film in the 80s called Miracle Mile with Anthony Edwards, and it's not like that film at all in the story or anything like that, but it's got that vibe. It's got that kind of very slow, languid vibe, and it's like building to what is whatever going to be the inevitable conclusion.
Yep.
And it's got, in Miracle Mile, it's got this kind of a dreamy, tangerine, dreamy score in the background, and this film is kind of like that. It doesn't have Tangerine Dream, but it's got the same kind of dreamy score. It never really feels... feels dangerous at
exactly.
all.
Exactly.
And it's the vibe I got from it. I walked out going, boy, that is so much like Miracle Mile, in the sense that you don't get that feeling of dread, you know? For Miracle Mile, for people who don't know what Miracle Mile is, the conclusion of the film is they're waiting for the end of the world. So you should feel an impending danger, and you don't. Once again, you don't get that feeling of impending danger, which is the same as this film, you know? So, look, I'm going to say it is a film that is intriguing, and it looks great, and I'm going to say wait for DVD.
Yeah. No, I have to agree with you on that, Dave. You know, DVD, this one's definitely a DVD.
This is a DVD watch. I don't think it's worth cinema dollars. We were lucky enough to have seen it at a media screening, but I think if I had paid cinema dollars for it, I actually would have been harder on it. A little bit, because then there's a monetary value involved. So I'm going to save you that harshness, and I'm going to say wait for DVD.
Yeah.
In fact, wait for Blu-ray. It'll look good on Blu-ray. It's slick-looking film. So in high def, it'll actually... Hey, hello, I've just lost all sound.
We're still going on the mics. Yes, we are.
Yes, okay, oh, it's back. What did you do? You touched and everything went dead for a second.
Well, I lost headphones, so...
Ah, okay, fair enough.
Anyway...
Okay, all right, so that's...
Film one down.
So film one down. There's monsters for you. And yeah, look, when it comes out on DVD, I will have another look at it and I'll reassess it. But at this point in time, I would say hold off. All right, let's do a little bit of entertainment news. And we got a couple of trailers mixed in here as well. First one up, Josh brought to my attention. I was actually unaware this trailer had come out. For those who don't know, Josh and I are both huge fans of Duncan Jones. Now, if you don't, that name is not a household name yet. It's not surprising. He's only made one film. But Josh and I both put it in our top five films of last year. And the film was called Moon with Sam Rockwell. Now, Duncan Jones has come out with his new film called Source Code. And I did not know that the trailer had been released yet, but Josh found it, and here it is. So here's the trailer for Source Code.
Sean. I took your advice. It was very good advice. Sean.
Luke, I can see that you think you know me, but I don't know who you are. My name is Captain Coulter Stevens.
You're kind of freaking me out.
No.
Talk to me, Sean.
Look, I don't know who Sean is, and I don't know who you are.
Welcome back, Captain Stevens.
Where am I?
You are inside the source code.
What is the source code?
It's a computer program, Captain.
Source code enables you to cross over into another man's identity in the last 8 minutes of his life.
At 7:48 this morning, a bomb exploded on a train outside of Chicago, killing everyone on board. A man named Sean Fentress was on that train. He is now you. Think, Captain, remember back. Who bombed the train?
I don't know who bombed the train!
Then try again.
Wait, no,
So, what do you think?
It's the same train, but it's different.
We've been informed there'll be another attack in 6 hours. If you find the bomber, the next attack can be prevented. Concentrate on the passengers in your car. Look for ones who seem nervous. As always, you will have 8 minutes.
8 minutes, and then I blow up again. What would you do if you knew you had less than 8 minutes to live?
I'd make those seconds count.
I want to go back in. I'm going to save her.
You can't. It doesn't work that way.
Christina is dead.
She doesn't have to be.
You cannot alter this reality while inside the source code.
I'm asking you to have the decency to let me try. What's going on?
He's in trouble. Tell me everything's gonna be okay.
Everything's gonna be okay.
Okay, so that was the trailer for Source Code. And I just want to say, welcome to all the new people who've just joined our chat room. It's we just kind of burst at the seams all of a sudden. And Digital Angel, welcome back. We haven't seen you in months. That's good to see you. All right, we actually had one question in our chat room for the last film that we just reviewed, Monsters, which said, would it have been better in 3D since you said it seemed like an amusement park ride? No, because nothing happens.
Yeah, it's not one of the good, it's one of the bad amusement rides, not the good ones.
That's
the one,
right.
The one that you sit on and after like 5 minutes you're like, please don't let there be another crappy lion, you know, like plastic lion come out of the water or something.
It's one of those ones. One of those amusement rides that Disney's famous for where you sit in a boat or you sit in a truck or one of those things and you just literally drive through something and go, ooh, and ah.
Yeah.
You know? Not things are happening. Yeah. So anyway, so that was Duncan Jones's new film Source Code. And I got to say that I am really excited and really worried all at the same time, Josh.
Yeah.
Because I'm really excited because I think Duncan Jones is an exceptional filmmaker. Mm. I'm really worried because often the sophomore film of a director, the second film out the gate, is being heavily compared to the first one. And they can often fall or stumble a little bit on that second
film. I actually worry on a different line because it's like, look, I like Duncan Jones and I like the way that he did Moon. And there's a lot of love in that film and there's a lot of work that's gone into it. The problem is, and again, it's difficult to sell in a trailer on a film like this, but there's a lot of tech and stuff like that. Like, I am unfortunately, to a certain extent, one of those kind of science nerds that if you give me bad science, I can't enjoy your film.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I will look at it and I'll be like, what? Mm. Like, what is this visual on-screen shit and hackers? You know, it's like, I can't take
it. It was
one
of our high points of the social network, which was the fact that it was the first time we saw real tech
exactly
on screen.
And look, I mean, I can buy it to a point where if you don't explain it too much or whatever, but with the concept they're dealing with, it's very difficult to, you know, sort of like, we've seen explanations to this.
Yes.
And in the trailer, I know that you may not allude to that, but it's like you should have left it out altogether. You know what I mean? And just sort of maybe hinted to what they were doing.
Let's wait and see. We've got it. We can't really pass judgment at this point.
Absolutely.
Because
I agree.
Duncan Jones, I'm going to give him a little bit of credit and say, and can you believe it? I'm sitting here touching my MacBook screen, hoping that things will happen. It's not touch screen.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there going, why isn't the link working? When are they going to make touch? Anyway, never mind. Not the tech show. All right, so we'll leave Source Code for a minute and say we have some Batman news. Now, we all know The Dark Knight Rises is coming, Christopher Nolan, you know.
Yada, yada, yada. If you don't know that, you're dead.
Right. Anyway, move aside and basically say it came out this week that Christopher Nolan has said this is his last Batman film. He concludes his trilogy. He is not doing any more. End of story. Christian Bale has said this is his last Batman movie. He's concluded the story. End of story. It's finished. Okay. Mm. Warner Brothers has made a really interesting hint. Now, this is not confirmed at this point, but their hint at this point is they're not going to reboot the Batman movies or continue the Batman movies for a little while. They're going to sit on Christopher Nolan's films, and instead, they're thinking about developing a new Batman TV series. Now, I'm really curious, and one of the speculations on comicbookmovie.com is this way they can actually reboot the Joker and bring the Joker back into it, because they wouldn't be then compared to Heath Ledger, because it's now a different product, and there's basically a different universe, because they really want to bring the Joker back. And I just thought that was a really interesting announcement, and I would be really down for a Batman series.
Well, it's interesting because me and you have talked about this before, but there is a real drive at the moment towards... There's almost an awakening happening in the industry where it's like the world's realizing that TV can sell just as well as movies, and there's this amazing sort of reinvention. And, you know, look, I mean, I would love to say that I think HBO was the thing that really sold it. Like, HBO kind of... How many times over the last 5 years have you actually sat down and gone, how good is, you know, Deadwood? Or how good was, you know, this series or whatever? It's almost like the whole experience was a contained film.
My only concern
is
that it would go to network television, like to the WB network, because I can get completely watered down. Wouldn't you really like to see somebody like AMC or HBO
I'd like to point out that in both the films, they only have an M rating.
No, that's true, but I'm talking about there's a sensibility on television where if you go into network primetime, you're going to get Smallville. I don't want Smallville.
I disagree, dude. There's a fine line between the two, and it's like Batman may wail on dudes in the movies, but there's no real huge amount of blood.
That's true.
You know what I mean? And so you can do dark without ever having to cross that line. And I think there's a great possibility for that. And look, you put enough money into it, especially with the amount of power behind Batman right now, we could, you know, we're moving into the thing. Walking Dead is a great example of what you can do with a decent budget on network TV.
Basic cable.
That's the basic cable. But what I'm saying is, like, TV as an idea is starting to grow.
If they put it onto basic cable or something like that, or they have the balls to actually go full force with this, I say great, fantastic. Yeah. My worry is that it gets the Smallville treatment, and I don't want that. They have mentioned, Warner Brothers has mentioned that for an actor to play Batman, they're looking for a Carl Urban type. And all I could think is, why not offer it to Carl Urban?
Yeah. I should go with Carl Urban, man.
Carl Urban would be perfect for this. I think he'd be a really good Batman. So, yeah, go on, Warner Brothers, ask him. Okay, so also in movie news this week, now I was going to bring up a picture and be really incredibly tasteless, but in the end I decided not to. But I really wanted to bring up a picture because it did occur to me that there is an issue here. Lindsay Lohan has been fired from the Linda Lovelace biopic. All right, now this is a concern because I thought this would be the film to really recharge her career and everything else.
Yeah.
Now, there were early reports saying that Lindsay Lohan walked from the project. Later reports came out saying, no, she was actually let go. The reason why she was let go is she's uninsurable. Nobody will touch her for insurance because of her drug problems and all her legal issues and blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
And they just couldn't do it. They couldn't insure her. So she has been let go. So Lindsay Lohan won't be playing Linda Lovelace. And they have replaced her with Malin Ackerman. Now, this is where it got me a little bit concerned because, and look, I don't mean to sound like a sexist pig here, but, you know, Linda Lovelace actually was kind of busty. She actually had boobs. And Malin Ackerman does not.
Mm.
Lindsay Lohan did. You know what I mean? Lindsay Lohan physically would have been a really good Linda Lovelace. Mm. And I think Malin Ackerman is just not right for the role. She's not raw enough, for one. She's a little bit too mannered. I mean, we saw her in Watchmen, and, you know, she's just that little bit too mannered.
Yeah, no, I agree with you with the fact that if you're going to go to kind of that sort of territory, you have to bring someone that's been there.
You need a bit of baggage. I mean?
Yeah,
you know? you could argue, let them act. Try acting, my dear boy, as Laurence Olivier would say. You know,
yeah.
It's like yes and no in this situation because it is a raw role. This is a tough role.
Yeah.
You know, and we sit and go, oh, it's an ex-porn star. How hard? No, this is a tough role. This is a woman who says she was coerced into porn. This is a woman who afterwards became an advocate against porn. And, you know, there was a lot of factors behind this. She had drug problems.
If you're going to get raw, like, a character has to go raw. And it's just, I haven't seen Ackerman really kind of sell that sort of, you know, pegged down, sort of knocked about kind of a person. Mm. And I mean, like, you look at someone like Charlize Theron in Monsters or Monster or something like that. Like, she went to dark places, like, as a person to fill that role. And it's like, if you're going to try and tell me that you're going to make her
actually would cast? And it's an interesting choice, I know, I would put Christina Ricci in the role.
Ooh, yeah, you know.
She's been to places like with Prozac Nation and stuff like that. She's done some really raw stuff.
Forehead, though, I can't.
Funnily enough, Linda Lovelace has a forehead like that.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Yeah. The only problem with Christina Ricci is she's so tiny.
Mm.
She's so little. She's so little. And Linda Lovelace wasn't quite that little. No. But you know, it's a hard choice, I know. And these, look, I'm really quite intrigued by the film, as you know. I actually have quite a, I don't want to say obsession, it's the wrong word. I'm incredibly curious and interested in the porn industry as a whole. I was writing a sitcom about it. You know, it's a subculture that I find incredibly intriguing. And I'm really looking forward to this film. It's a particularly interesting period of time in the porn industry. And I was looking forward to this, and I really thought Lindsay Lohan had the right stuff for it. But as I say, you can insure, you can't insure. No. It's as simple as that. Okay, and somebody said the Deep Throat documentary is brilliant. Yes, the Deep Throat documentary is brilliant. If you haven't seen Inside Deep Throat, go out and rent it straight away. Although, be warned, it shows the infamous scene in full detail and doesn't shy away from it. And so if you're not ready to see something like that, don't watch it. We have a new trailer for The Green Hornet. Now, I'm going to say, because I have been incredibly negative about this film, you know that. And I'm going to say that the new trailer for somebody saying what's inside Deep Throat, it's the documentary made by Brian Grazer and Ron Howard, not directed by them, but produced by them, about the Deep Throat phenomenon and about the entire film and her and everything else. So it's a really, really good documentary. Now, the new trailer for Green Hornet came out this week. And I have to say, it's a better trailer.
Okay.
I still think the film is going to suck, but this is a better trailer. And they should have released this trailer first. Also, it shows a little bit of our man from Inglourious Basterds.
All right.
So here we go. Here's Green Hornet.
There's a party going down at the Casa de Brit. Bring all your friends as long as
they are chicks.
Today's top story, newspaper mogul James Reed was found dead, leaving his son in charge of his media empire.
I'm Cato.
I'm sorry to hear about your father.
Who is Cato?
He worked on your father's cars and made his coffee.
Beer?
Lay it on me, Cato.
You are full of little surprises.
Check this out.
You drew all these?
Wanna see something cool?
Think about this, Cato. I haven't done anything good my whole life. We've been wasting our potential. You a little bit more than me. The city needs our help. We could be heroes.
Okay. I'll need some weapons.
Yes, we will. And armor.
But no tights.
Good.
Are you ready to die?
I control the crime. I control the city.
Let's roll, Cato.
The Green Hornet has been attracting a lot of attention.
Whoa!
Is it gas gun?
How come I'm the only one with a gun? Well,
because you don't have fighting experience.
How does it even work?
Hey. Okay.
Do you work for Mr. Reed?
I'm his executive associate.
He's my man.
I'm not your man.
He's not my man. Not we're we're just platonic friends. Yes.
I want the head of the Green Hornet.
want it tonight.
Kato, you have a secret mission. Take my hand. Come with me on this adventure.
I'll go with you. But I don't want to touch you.
Careful, I'll be careful. Okay? I just want to look at it. Just give it to me for 1 second, and I'll just. I hadn't seen that trailer before. That's a lot better. That's just way better cut and way better put together. And I'm with you, Dave. I'm lot more excited about.
I still worry greatly about this movie, but it's a much better trailer.
Yeah,
it's at least it shows a little bit more. It's got a little bit more substance to it now.
Yeah,
the humor actually works a bit better. And look, I'm still really, really, really fascinated by the fact that Michel Gondry directed this film. Right, and you're right. Some of that stuff would look really fantastic in 3D. The only thing that worries me is the conversion.
Yeah,
if it had been shot in 3D, that's a whole different story.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our last two little bits of news, and then we're going to get into the second movie review. First of all, very quickly, we'll just say that Joss Whedon has now come out and talked about this Buffy reboot.
Right.
Because as we said last week, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is being rebooted as a feature film without Joss Whedon. And he actually came out in a couple of statements, and one of the statements he said was, obviously, I have strong mixed emotions about something like this. My first reaction upon hearing who was writing it was Whit Stillman and Wes Anderson. It's written by a woman called Whit Anderson. He's he's having fun with it. He goes, this is going to be the most sardonic, adorable movie ever. He then goes on and says, I'll make a mint. This is worth more to me than all of my Toy Story residuals combined. And then he actually said, and I think the most appropriate thing he said was, I always hoped the Buffy would live on even after my death. But, after my death, I don't love the idea of my creation in other hands. But I'm also well aware that many more hands than mine went into making that show what it was. And there is no legal grounds for doing anything other than sighing audibly. I can't wish people who are passionate about my little myth ill. I can, however, take this time to announce that I'm making a Batman movie. He goes, because there's a franchise that truly needs updating. It says, so look for The Dark Knight Rises way earlier than any other one, and also was made more cheaply and in Toronto, rebooting into a theater near you.
Oh, God bless that, man.
I love Joss Whedon if I said that. And last but not least, in Film Buzz, we have a photograph. Now, the link for this photo is in our show notes for our audio listeners, but we did talk a while ago that they were rebooting Judge Dredd, which is probably a good thing because the Sylvester Stallone one should be forgotten.
I disagree entirely.
Well, look,
the film was incredible.
No, look, I love Judge Dredd. Don't get me wrong, but I love it for all the wrong reasons, okay?
It has a place in my heart. It may not be the place that you want it to be, Dave, but it's a place in my heart. Yeah,
I awesome. Actually own a copy of Judge Dredd, and I watch it quite often, but I can recognize that this film has issues.
Oh, it's a mess.
However, the reboot is being filmed. It's not a pipe dream anymore, and Carl Urban is playing Dredd, and here's the first photo of him. And here he is as Judge Dredd, and it has been announced, like in the comic books, he will not take off his helmet.
Damn fucking right.
So there's Carl Urban as Judge Dredd. The only issue I have with this picture is the helmet looks too big for his head.
It really does.
Yeah.
It really does. It's just his jaw is not pronounced enough.
And I will say the one thing that the original film with Sylvester Stallone got absolutely right were their uniforms and bikes.
And the color scheme. Tacky gold.
And the huge gold, epaulets and stuff like that. I did like the production design on the original, and they've kind of toned that down a little bit. So I'm a little worried about that. But look, Carl Urban will be good. He doesn't take off his helmet. That's good. Hopefully they'll, in the new movie, they'll go into a little bit more of the mythos. It'd be nice to see Mega City 2. It'd be nice to see the, what were they called? The time-traveling machines that would go back and catch dinosaurs for food sources.
Oh, dude, I don't remember, but yeah.
You know, all that stuff, and the Umpty Candy, and, you know, all the other stuff. And really, it would be nice to see Block Wars in full effect, where whole blocks go at each other. So I'll be really curious to see what they're going to do with this film, and I'm sure we'll have more information as we go on. I was a huge fan of 2000 AD, the comic book, and Judge Dredd throughout my teens, and so I really am attached to this, and I'd like to see them do it right.
Oh, dude, and I also agree with Rogue Sar, who says he'd like to see what the bike looks like. I'm like, yep.
Yeah, well, the bikes in the first film were good. They got the bike.
They got it right, but I'd love to see if they're going for that kind of more minimalistic style on the outfits. I want to see what they're going to do with this bike.
Yeah, what were those? Somebody's saying dino for food. Yeah, what were they called? They were called the bone crunchers or something like that, and they were basically these guys who would go back in time, catch dinosaurs, and bring them back up to feed the nation. Very odd stuff. And, of course, then there's all the wastelands and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, the cursed earth, as they would say. Mm. All right, that's it for our film news. Let's get into our second feature film. The second feature film this week is a film called Fair Game. It is actually based on this book. Whoops, there we go. This book and another book written by her husband, which we'll get to in detail. This is actually the true story of Valerie Plame Wilson. Now, let me go through this, and we'll say Fair Game, directed by Doug Lyman, and if that name is familiar to you, he directed the first Bourne Identity.
Yep. And he directed good one.
The good one, and he directed Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jumper. We won't hold those against him too much.
Yeah, we will.
And it's written by Jez Butterworth and John Henry Butterworth, brothers, I'm assuming, and based on the book's Fair Game by Valerie Plame Wilson and The Politics of Truth by Joseph Wilson, her husband. Mm. The film stars Naomi Watts and Sean Penn, and there are others, but let's face it, they're the only two that we really care about at this point. It's based on the autobiography of real-life undercover CIA operative Valerie Plame, whose career was destroyed and marriage strained to its limits when her covert identity was exposed by a politically motivated press leak. As a covert officer in the CIA's counter-proliferation division, Valerie leads an investigation into the existence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Valerie's husband, diplomat Joe Wilson, is drawn into the investigation to substantiate an alleged sale of enriched uranium from Niger. But when the administration ignores his findings and uses the issue to support the call to war, Joe writes a New York Times editorial outlining his conclusion and ignites a firestorm of controversy, including outing her. Now, let's just be very clear here for a second before we actually show trailers and stuff like that. Just for those who don't understand, if you are a CIA covert operative, it is actually against the law to reveal her identity.
Yeah.
So the President of the United States can't even do that, right? Because they are national security, right?
Yeah.
And in the film, and as in the book, and as in real life, a politician who was pissed at her husband for basically saying that they lied revealed her identity, put it into a newspaper article, and basically outed her to the world, throwing in a whole bunch of issues like missions that she was actually involved in at that time just collapsing and everything else. It was a absolute shitstorm that if you actually were watching the news about 2 years ago, you would have seen this all over the news.
Oh, and it was such a horrifying time because people just had no idea of what to think. Like, the whole of America was just against them.
Well, yeah, because they immediately started thinking she was the traitor and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And they started declaring, they were just hounding him, and they were calling him a liar and all this sort of stuff. And you sit there and go, because like a good CIA operative, even though she'd been outed, she kept her mouth shut.
Yeah.
And she was basically, you know, saying, what do I do in this situation? And she was actually, and the reason why her marriage was strained was the fact that she was fighting against her husband, who wanted to go public at every stage he could. He was a very verbose, very vocal man. He was saying, the truth will set us free, basically. And the film basically follows their life pre-outing through to the outing, to the point where she finally decides to have her say. Let's have a look at the trailer, and then we'll talk about the film. So that's the real life. Now let's have a look at the trailer, and we'll talk about the film version of this.
I gotta be at the airport in 45 minutes.
Have a good trip.
I love you.
I promise I'll behave.
I promise to behave.
See, everyone's on their best behavior.
I want you to head up operations. This is top priority.
You're in business with a terror organization.
Who are you?
If you get out of this car, I can't protect you.
You have no idea what we can and cannot do.
On a mission to find the facts.
The vice president has received a report concerning the purchase of material to build nuclear weapons.
We need to get in close.
They turn to her husband for answers.
It is my opinion. A sale that size could not have happened.
I have teams in the field. They're all saying the same thing.
But when the truth was made public...
What do you think the White House wants to hear, huh? There was no nuclear program.
We need to change the story.
They made her pay the price.
Valerie, your name is in the paper. It says you're a CIA agent.
Wilson never worked for the CIA, but his wife...
As an agency operative.
Have you killed people? I can't tell you anything. I have a critical operation in Baghdad. My contacts packed and ready to go. I've got to get a message to them.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I gave my word.
No, it's over.
My name is everywhere, my real name.
Those in the highest office sought to destroy the career of a covert agent to punish me for telling the truth.
Your wife is a traitor.
How dare you talk about my wife? You don't know her.
We know where you live. People threatened to kill my husband, hurt my children.
We've got to strike back. They'll bury us if we don't.
They push you until they find the point at which you break. You can't break me. I don't have a breaking.
Okay, so that was the trailer for Fair Game, directed by Doug Liman. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and start here and say that I actually loved this film. Mm-hmm. Before we go any further, though, our chat room during that trailer said, boy, where's Sean Penn been all these years? Guys, he won an Oscar last year for the film Milk.
Yeah.
So he has been working pretty consistently.
Yes, and if you haven't seen that film, it is very, very good.
Yeah, it's a very powerful film indeed. We actually reviewed it on the show... quite a while ago now, and it was interesting because they really got mixed reaction, because I reviewed it with Mirren, and she didn't like it very much, but it was intriguing. It was an intriguing review. Go back and have a listen to that one. I didn't mind it. I thought it was pretty good. I thought he was exceptional. He did such a good job. Okay, now, this film I really enjoyed. Doug Liman, I've had a problem with since, I think, The Bourne Identity, which is the fact that I don't think he knows how to finish a movie. His films don't ever seem to have an ending. They just kind of peter off into nothing.
Yes.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith did that. Jumper did that. They all just kind of go, oh, movie's over. Running time's up. Finish. This film does have an ending, and it's a really, really good ending. I mean, it's a phenomenally powerful moment, actually, and we won't spoil it, but it is a really powerful moment. I thought that Naomi Watts really brought life to Valerie, and I thought Sean Penn was fantastic.
Sean Penn, to me, is the complete... It's what holds the film together. Like, I mean, look, Naomi Watts played what was she was supposed to. She was supposed to play a mother and a CIA agent that just stayed quiet the entire time. And this would, you know, like, I mean, she wears the emotion well, and it was, you know, it was very powerful from
look,
that.
Look, she's a really competent actress.
She was competent for sure, but Sean Penn is just insanely good in this film.
There's actually a speech at about the 3-quarter mark where he gets up and discusses about liberty and freedoms and freedom of speech and so forth, and it sends a goosebumps down your arms. I mean, it's fantastic.
Oh, and look, I mean, there are so many moments in this film. Like, I mean, he immediately establishes a very powerful thing as a very good father, obviously, and you know, he's a very loving husband, but the truth overrides everything. And I mean, like, as someone that has possibly over-opinionated natures, I would like to say that, look, I mean, it is difficult for someone in those situations to just stay quiet. They won't. Yeah. You won't get that kind of a person to just shut up. They will keep talking until they get where
and,
they want
to
go.
And sometimes you could argue that sometimes there is a time when you really do need to just sit back a bit. Mm. He doesn't have that moment.
No.
He believes the truth will set you free. He believes that you don't hide behind this sort of stuff. And he basically...
Well, he doesn't...
And he's all about integrity. Mm. He delivered... his assessment, the government lied about his assessment, and he wasn't going to stand for that.
Oh, someone doesn't get that many contacts in life without being somebody that's completely trustworthy and full of integrity. And it's what makes the film so powerful, because I mean, like, without wrecking any of the story moments, the scene between Naomi Watts and him when she finally kind of comes to terms with the fact that she needs to do what's right and come forward and talk. And it's that whole realization that the moment where she comes back to see him, where they've been separated for a short period of time, and just the tension and the emotion in that room was just absolutely beautiful.
And, like, and it's a really nice moment in the film because they both give in.
Yeah.
She basically says, "You're right, we need to speak."
Yeah.
And he said, "I'm sorry, maybe I went too far."
Yeah.
You know, so there's this concession on both sides. Yeah. And it's at that point you go, you know, this relationship is going to work. Mm. You know that they're going to stand side by side and fight this.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And I mean, like, that is really what holds. I mean, in a film so about the characters, especially when you're talking about real life subjects, it's so important to establish the individual people and sort of really sell those characters. And just both actors were just in such fine form. Mm. And like
the support cast was in fine form too. I mean, everybody working around them was really good. Mm. The only actor, and I'm not sure who the actor is, but the only actor who I thought was kind of a caricature was the politician who outed her.
Mm.
He kind of felt like, you know, Mr. Whiplash, the bad guy. You know. And
But what I did also really like is you
Snidely Whiplash. That's what I think of.
You really travel with the character, with the characters through the story, and some of the moments she has to deal with really are kind of gut-wrenching. Like when you just see these people that she's standing up for and the country that she believes in. I mean, it's really nice to have a look at kind of patriotism from a different angle, like not a blindsided patriotism, but just a knowledge that like that America is not the big bad evil army that storms across countries and things. It's like there are people, like you have to separate.
It's also interesting looking at a film from the point of view where the CIA aren't the bad guys.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, and you sit there and you look at it and go, the CIA analysts and all these people who are working there are all the ones who are basically saying, we have no evidence.
Yeah.
We have no, and there's one point where she sits there and says, one person's opinion is not truth.
Yeah.
And we have to take all these components and put them all together, and we come out with an assessment.
There's, you know? There's a brilliant statement from one of the guys that goes in to basically try and, you know, sort of get some level of sort of normality back into the office as they all get stormed through during the worst of it.
Mm.
And he just says, he's like, well, how sure are you? 95% for, 98% for, you know, like 1% might be, you know, 10,000 lives. And you can just see the look in his face. He's just absolutely exasperated by the very comment. It's like intelligence isn't 100%.
No.
There is no such thing as 100%.
And the politician's basically saying, well, your 1% wrong would mean, you know, so many million American lives lost. And you can almost look on his face, it's like, no, that's not what it equates to at all.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what
it
means.
You can tell the complete lack of understanding between the
two. Politicians have their agenda. The CIA is trying to make this balanced. And that's why they got Joe Wilson to go to Niger. Mm. They said that we need the evidence. They brought it back. That evidence was put into their assessment.
That's what I like, because the other thing is, it's just really nice to sort of show people a bit more of sort of what happened behind the closed curtains, and the fact that there's big parts of the American government that had no idea what was going on at that point, because no one was told. And there were all these rumors flying around, and people have just thrown, you know, answers into people's mouths and so on and so forth. It's like, when you pull it apart, you can't look at it as a country thing. You have to look at it as a government.
Yeah.
And the government's responsible for what happened then, not the whole of, like, you know, the FBI and the CIA and all that. These people were just going, what the hell is going on?
There's that one scene early in the film where Naomi Watts is having that meeting with that one little White House rep who's basically saying that the aluminium tubes are for doing uranium, and they're to the exact specifications of, you know, this German scientist and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, actually, they're not.
Yeah.
These tubes were actually, you know, said to be longer and thinner and blah. He goes, what would you know about it? She goes, actually, I wrote the report on that. You know? You sit there and it's like, you can see right there from the very beginning that they are so far ahead of all this politicking that is going on. And yet the politicking wins.
Yeah.
And that's it's a frustrating film in that sense, because you sit there and go, but that's not a frustrating thing about the film. It's a frustrating thing about life.
Mm.
And they're showing that how they just powered through to do all this sort of stuff. Look, it's a really good film. It's a good film for those who like a bit of political controversy. It is a good film for those who just want a good spy thriller.
Mm.
It's a good film if you just really want to go see some really good acting. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and I think if you've got some time over the weekend and you want to go see a movie, you could do far worse than see this film.
Yeah.
You could go see Monsters. But, I didn't say that.
Yeah. No, look, I totally agree with you, man. Like, I'm not one for political thrillers. Usually, I'm... Like, I mean... I will like the occasion one every now and then where it's sort of more of a thriller than it is a political thriller, things like Pelican Brief or something like that, where you've got like a such a good story and such a tense connection. For a true story to handle so well with such good actors and also still hold up as like if it was a fake thing, still as a decent story is really, really good. And I thought this film was really, really well handled, really beautiful, and it's a really good eye for anyone that wasn't paying attention during that time.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about
it. And it's not preachy.
It's got the director's real kind of like obvious nature in it, where it's that whole kind of like everything is cut and paste. You know, like everything is exactly how it should be. Like they've put everything in place. Like he's very methodical with the way that he puts things on screen. Like Bourne was the same way. It's like the story has to be, you know, 100% how he wanted to tell it, and there's no kind of like loss in translation or nothing gets hidden in the mix of the story or editing or anything like that. It's like the story is told how it should be, and he's very military in the way he directs.
The comparison film, people are saying, is it the top five spy film and stuff like that? No, because it's not actually a spy film. Yes, it's about the CIA and so forth, but it really is a drama, and it is actually more of a political film than it is a spy film. The film that can be closest compared to it in the same kind of idea would be Green Zone. In the sense that it's, you know, an anti-Iraq film and, you know, blah, blah, and all this sort of stuff. This is how you make that kind of film.
Green
Zone failed desperately, and this is how you make that kind of... This film makes a very, very, very strong point about that entire time in history. Yes, it's a true story, and yes, that wasn't the point they were really trying to make. They were really talking about her, but it makes that point in the background.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's a really powerful point to make, and that's kind of how you do this. Green Zone hits you over the head with it. Yeah. And basically said, look at us, we're making a political statement, you know? Yeah. This is really about the people that are directly affected, and it is well worth seeing. So do go see it. All right. We have a new list of five this week, Josh.
Yep.
Now, this is actually a user-requested list of five. Oh, before we do our list of five, very, very quickly. It's not in the show notes. I just thought I'd share. In this month's Empire magazine, which, of course, has Tron Legacy on the front and made me immediately snatch it off the shelf, and it has a new poster and it will put up on the back wall. It's got a Let the Right One In poster. No, but anyway, in here there's a whole article about the making of Tron Legacy. And Steve Lisberger, who directed the original Tron, is a producer on Tron Legacy, and he also makes a cameo in the film, apparently, as the bartender. So we'll have to have a look at that. But there was one little passage in here that I just thought was really, really interesting, and I just thought I'd share it with you. He basically said that in 1982, he was disqualified from the Academy Awards under the Best Visual Effects category.
Yeah.
And my first reaction is, it's Tron. The entire film is visual effects. Apparently, here's your little tidbit of trivia for you, the Academy felt they cheated because there was no real visual effects or creativity because it was just punching numbers into a computer.
how far we've come.
Boy, can you just sit back and take for a moment how little the world understood Tron in 1982. This is why the film bombed. Nobody understood it.
Yeah,
Tron Legacy is going to be a hit. You just watch. All right, let's go on to our list of five. Our list of five this week, we got an email, and the email reads, "Hey, I am a new listener to Film Actually, and I was wondering if you could recommend me some movies to watch. Love your podcast, Alistair." Well, Alistair, that's a really, really broad question.
Well, me and Dave sat down when we first got this thing, and we said that we needed to try and kind of cut it down and sort of make the list a little bit more understandable. So we took it in the best way that we could understand out of that, which is we're suggesting five. We kind of came to the decision that it's kind of top five films that you may not have seen. So it's like ones that aren't the obvious choices.
Well,
so
I took it a slightly different way because we interpret these things independently and we always do our lists separately. And I took it as a slightly different way, and I kind of thought of it as a list of films that you must see before you die. You know, these are films that are just must watches. Now, even that was too broad, unfortunately. And so I sat there and I was toying and throwing ideas backwards and forwards with my lovely wife Katie last night, trying to figure out what the hell do you put on a list like this. And then it occurred to me that there are actually two sides of my personality. There's geek fanboy, and then there is film school graduate, because I was a film school graduate, right? And so we look at it and go, oh, shit, what do I do here? Because I think you should watch this film, but really that's kind of a wanker film. You know what I mean? And so I sat there and I went, you know what? I'm going to write two lists of five. So for this particular list of five, we have three lists going. Okay, we've got Josh's list of films. What was your category again? Films.
Films that you should watch that you haven't seen.
That you haven't seen. And I have list of five movies you must see from the Geek Fanboy. Mm. And I have a list of five films you must see from Film School Critic.
Right.
Okay.
So how are we going to do this?
So we'll just do it round robin. I'll just do two at once. Okay.
Okay. Cool.
All right. So you can start.
Yeah.
And what's your number five?
Well, look, I tried to go as obscure as I can, and please let me explain to Alistair and anyone else that might take these films. I'm not saying these films are amazing. I'm saying that these films are a really good watch, and they're also ones that are a little bit off the line of mainstream. Mm-hmm. So it's like the kind of film that, when you walked in the video store, you might overlook because it has a crappy cover or because there's no real reason to pick it up or whatever. So this is my list, and this is how it is. Number five on my list is a New Zealand film. I watched this a while ago. I bought it on DVD a while ago and rewatched it because I was unsure whether or not I actually thought it was good. But it's one of those really clever films that... number one, changes. It's a bit like Shallow Grave in the fact that it kind of changes its tone halfway through the film. And also, it's a really well-made film if you can get past the accents, which, of course, is something that a lot of people struggle with the New Zealanders. But the film is based around a bunch of Waikato uni students. And in Waikato, there's a lot of... there's a lot of universities around the same area, so there's a lot of drinking done and a lot of crazy, you know, sort of combined uni kind of things. And the film starts out as that, and basically these bunch of five people that get together and squat in a house to basically, you know, subsidize costs because none of them can afford to go to university.
I'm curious what the film is.
And as you go through the film, they basically get to this point where there's this room downstairs that they haven't gone to, and when they open it up, they actually find out that they're actually living right on top of this ginormous weed production, like hydroponics plant. And being uni students and not very smart, they just start smoking it and having fun and so on and so forth. And at that stage, it's quite funny and so on and so forth. Then the owners come home. And from there on, it just gets so dark and everyone starts to turn on each other and people get tied to chairs and stuff. It just goes amazingly dark.
All right,
you're
killing me. What's the movie?
The movie is called Scarfies, and I'll loan it to you.
Oh, loan it to me. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's not the greatest film in the world, but it's one of those films that not everyone's seen, and it's actually really, really good fun. So, yeah. No, everyone should go out and check
fantastic.
That one out.
Fantastic. I want to see that now, so you have to loan that one to me.
Yeah.
Okay, the geek fanboy in me. Now, just to explain, I only chose one film from any particular genre.
Yeah.
So I've actually broken this down into genres. So my number five is in the romance genre. Mm-hmm. Okay. So number five of the geek fanboy, I would say, and the other reason why I made these lists basically is to say these are all films that have impacted society in some way. They have absolutely changed or made a dent to the fact where it has become part of our vernacular. Okay. Mm. So my number five is When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
There is not a person around who doesn't know I'll have what she's having.
Yeah.
All right. So I would say that if you come down to romance films and if you only ever see one romance film in your life, this is the film to watch. Okay. Now, the Film School critic side of me says, well, if you're going to watch a romance film, the one romance film that you should watch is Casablanca.
Yeah.
Okay. So
look, even I agree with that one.
All right. The film, the number five on the Film School critic is Casablanca.
Yeah.
Okay, Josh, your number four.
My number four is one which we've actually reviewed for the site, and anybody can feel free to just go up to the search bar and look for it. It's under Forgotten Films. It is Behind the Mask. The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Mm.
Now, this film, for any horror fan, is a must-watch. This was suggested to me by Celine and Ben.
And then you passed it on to me.
And then I passed it on to Dave. There's one part of you that could enjoy it on a horror fan because there's a lot of references and a lot of comedy.
But we should
jokes.
Make it very clear. It's actually not scary.
No, it's really not. And this is why I actually put on another horror as well on my list because it's like, to me, that's not really a horror film. It does have aspects of horror and it also does have gore and so on and so forth. But it's just a really interesting look. It's kind of almost reality TVing sort of the process And sort of breaking down the horror film of the 80s, like that very generational kind of like slasher horror film, but doing it in this great kind of comedic way, and also kind of as a documentary. It's just a brilliant film, and it's so hard to find, but if you can find Behind the Mask...
It is on DVD. So.
Yes, it is available on DVD. Please find it and get it. You will not regret a single moment if you even like horror, even minutely.
Also, if you are new to the whole horror genre, it's an amazing education because they basically explain the mechanics of horror.
Exactly. Yeah, no.
Of the slasher film. It's a very clever film indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, my number four, and now I also must state that my list is in no particular order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just by category. So my number four for my geek fanboy, the five movies you must see, I don't think there is a film, in particular science fiction slash fantasy, film that has probably influenced the world as much as Star Wars.
Yeah.
Not part four, not trilogies, not originals. Star Wars. Yeah. 1977 Star Wars. Yeah. That film broke all box office records. It set a new standard in filmmaking, visual effects. It set a new standard in everybody knows Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so I think that that would be my number four on the geek fanboy. But I think if we're going to go to my other list, we've got a drama film as number four. And I would say that I think there is no finer drama than Citizen Kane.
Oh, dude.
And I think if you have not seen Citizen Kane, now my lovely wife, Katie, would disagree. It. She hated Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
And this is why it's not for everybody. But this film set the standard of filmmaking.
Mm.
Orson Welles reinvented and rewrote the rule book. He dug holes in stages to set low angles. He built roofs on sets, which had never been done before because you hung lights in the ceiling. He decided he wanted to see the ceilings, and they had to find other ways to light. He basically came up with the concept of a universal focus lens so that he could have these long shots. An amazing effort and an amazing story. And let's face it, Rosebud is a piece of history. Yeah. So, all right, Josh, your number three.
My number three is a film. Look, this is probably on my list the closest to a mainstream film I've got, but it's amazing how many people outside my little geek world totally miss this film. And it's a difficult film to kind of sell as any particular genre. I guess maybe action, but it's one of those films that just got lucky in the fact that it was just the collection of the right people at the right time. These people have all moved on to do other things except for Troy Duffy, who just destroyed his life. But apart from that, it was just a collaboration of these perfect people and this guy, Troy Duffy, who is in my eyes a legendary director for just in one big step becoming one of Hollywood's great kind of like eye contact people where everybody was like, who is that guy? And then burning every bridge he had after the project. And of course I'm talking about Boondock Saints,
yes,
which is just a fantastic watch. It's an absolute rip roar of violence, everything you can imagine that is just excessive, but at the same time tells a good story, is really funny, and just has these actors that you wouldn't get on your first film, like Billy Connolly and William Dafoe and the guy that's currently in The Walking Dead
Bean's in it as well, isn't he?
No, it was, I'm talking about one of the two brothers, the guy that plays the younger, what's his name? I can't remember.
What his name is. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Fantastic film. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's just
awesome. And avoid the sequel.
And there is no sequel.
Now, if you're interested in Troy Duffy at all, there's also Slash Filmcast does series of interviews as well. They actually have one, which is an interview with Troy Duffy around the time that the second one was coming out. And they talked about the whole controversy and everything that he did. It's a very interesting listen.
Yeah.
So you can find that on their website at slashfilm.com. Okay. It's a great film, though. Boondock Saints is a great film.
Yeah, no, really good.
My number three as a geek fanboy is in the drama category, and I would say that I don't think there has been a drama in the last 40 years that would even compare or have the same cultural significance as The Godfather.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody knows the image of Don Corleone with the cheeks and the cat in his lap. And we all know the scene where Sonny gets riddled with bullets at the toll booths. And I mean, and we all know You're Such a Disappointment to Me.
Yeah.
And, you know, the film just was an amazing cultural moment that has survived and keeps coming back. And everybody keeps going back and looking at it. And the sequel was just as good with number two, forget number three. But the one and two are like a 1-2 punch, but number one still to me is my favorite. Now, as the film school critic, the number five on his list was, if you're going for an action adventure film, he would say, forget all these silly remakes. And I would say, you must watch The Seven Samurai.
Yes.
Now, Akira Kurosawa's 3-hour epic samurai action film with all the drama and intensity of that film lays out is a phenomenal watch and has inspired countless films, but most specifically The Magnificent Seven. But Kurosawa has a huge body of work, but I think the film that he is best known for is probably The Seven Samurai.
Which is just, I totally agree. It's just, it will leave you, it will change you. Yeah. By watching that film.
Yeah, absolutely. And then now you also got to be careful because there are actually two versions of Seven Samurai kicking around. Yeah. There is a 2-hour cut down version. Do look for the full uncut version. The full uncut version is close to 3 hours long, and that's the one to watch.
No, it's with everything still intact.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. All right, so your number two.
My number two is, now I would say almost everyone I know has seen the remake of this film, but a lot of people overlook the original because people seem to tell everyone when the subject comes up that it's just the same film, and I couldn't agree any less with that statement, because we've all seen The Departed, and The Departed is a fantastic film, but Infernal Affairs is in essence very similar as a film. Like, they're both shot quite similarly, they both have basically the same style of characters, but they are so different that when I sat down and watched Infernal Affairs a week after The Departed had come out, I was never lost with kind of boredom over, seeing the same film or anything like this, because it's just a whole different cultural feel. It's like, walking into a store and walking into a store of the same kind.
It was actually a very good move of Scorsese's to give his film a different title.
Yeah.
Because they aren't the same film.
No.
They have the same core idea.
Yeah.
But it's a remake, really, in concept.
People have to watch it, because there's just certain scenes that work better in that film than they do in The Departed.
I still think Infernal Affairs is actually a better film. Yeah. That's a personal feeling.
No, I agree, because I think that when you start to break down the individual scenes, like the chase scene when he leaves the movie theater and goes, is so much more effective in the...
Before you go on, people are going to say, I'm waiting for the chat room to jump up now, saying, oh, but because you saw Infernal Affairs first. Actually, I didn't.
Me neither.
I saw The Departed first, and then I went back and watched Infernal Affairs. And usually in that situation, you're going to like the one you saw first better. But I actually preferred Infernal Affairs. More depth to it.
Exactly. There's a bit more depth, and it's a much rawer feel because it's got that kind of like low end kind of, sort of Asian feel where it's like gritty cameras and,
I'm also a sucker for Hong Kong cinema. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Totally need to see it.
Absolutely. Okay. My number two is in the comedy category. And I don't think there is a comedy. This is from the Geek Fanboy. I don't think there is a comedy that has had the same sort of lasting effect or cultural significance to our society as very early 1980s when Monty Python brought out Life of Brian. I think Life of Brian is so integrated into our psyches. We know, always look on the bright side of life. We always know he's not the Messiah. He's just a naughty little boy. It's like everybody knows these quotes. Even if they haven't seen the film, they know the quotes.
Yeah.
So I think that this film, out of all of the Monty Python films, and funnily enough, my favorite Monty Python film is actually Holy Grail. But I think Life of Brian is the one that they will always be remembered for. I think this is the one that also, lest we forget, caused such controversy when it came out.
Those guys were just, kids poking a fire or...
Yeah, they even went so far as to say, well, yes, but, Jesus Christ, JC, John Cleese, JC. I mean, they were really just poking it all the way. And good on them, because now the film is revered by everyone.
Yeah.
Exactly. And people look at it in the good spirit that it was taken in.
It was all done for comedy, and that's exactly how it should have been.
Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic film. And in fact, in talking about this list, my wife and I started just rattling off quotes from Life of Brian. And she's not even a huge film buff, and you sit there and go, this is the impact that it's had. Everybody knows this film. On the film school critic, I'm going for a horror film. And I don't think there is any horror film that has had quite the same impact as Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. This is the film that has probably inspired just about every horror film to come, and I don't think there's a person on this planet that doesn't know that music.
Oh, dude, and not only that, like, I mean, when I rewatched that film, because I recently bought a collection, an Alfred Hitchcock collection, and I've just been going through and watching all these old ones, I can't get over just how long ago it was shot and just how incredibly beautiful the film is. It doesn't matter. Like, his work is just beautiful. Even if you were not into horror, just looking at every shot, it is just film mastery at its best. Oh,
it is stunning. And we've talked about this on the show before, but why not? We'll bring it up one more time. Just a little piece of film trivia for you. That shower scene, which is the thing that everybody remembers from that film.
Yeah.
That shower scene is such a brilliant piece of filmmaking. Mm. Apparently, Universal Studios made him a torso that he could stab. Yeah. They built him a full, you know, torso filled with blood and the whole bit, and they put it in the bath, and they were going to stab it. And he didn't use it. And he actually said he didn't need to use it. And instead, he opted for, I think there's something like 196 cuts in that sequence. And you never actually see the blade make contact once. No. And it is so brilliantly shot and so brilliantly cut together that with the motion and these cuts and this rhythm and her screaming and so forth, and that sound, which for those who don't know, is actually a knife going into an apple, that chick sound, with that music. And you really do believe you are seeing her being hacked to pieces.
Yeah.
And yet you don't see anything.
And it's terrifying, even now. Absolutely. And like that works so much for, like, I'm currently working on a review for Friday the 13th, and this movie has not aged well. Like, no. I mean, you laugh at what the violence is now, but that scene there still to today makes my skin
everything.
Crawl.
It's like, I gotta say, I still get haunted by spoilers for a film that is 50 years old. But I still get haunted by that last shot in Psycho, where he's in the police station and it's just that close up of his eyes and that fly flying around, and they slowly superimpose his mother's skull over his face.
Yeah.
That shot is eerie as fuck, man. You know?
Dude, I got goosebumps right now.
Absolutely.
I got goosebumps.
It's a must-see film. And don't watch the remake. The remake is crap. Yeah. This is the film you go see. Okay. By the way, have you noticed a pattern here? All the films I've mentioned on the film school list are all in black and white. Okay, you're number one. Hit me with it.
Look, I talk about this film like every third week. And I just think, look, clever tricks, you know.
Hold that thought for 1 second. I just have to address the chat room. James from Melbourne says, laugh out loud. As soon as I get into the shower, I always think of that film. James, I'm with you. I cannot take a shower without locking the door.
Really?
Cannot.
Well, there you go.
I cannot take a shower without locking the door.
Yeah, I don't have a big, like, covering thing, but I've never thought about that. And I'm going to continue to never think about that. So that I don't actually...
There are certain films that directly affect you at a very, very low level. And the idea, you are at your most vulnerable, naked under a shower.
Some people will know, if they know me as a person, I am a scuba instructor. Like, I have been to depths that most people will never get to. I've been in and outside wrecks. I have done very dangerous things. If it's deep water and I'm in the wrong headspace and I look down into the water, I will still be terrified, and it's because of Jaws.
Absolutely.
And it will be for my entire life.
Yeah. And Jaws, you know, Jaws is an amazing film. All right, let's hear your number one.
All right, my number one is a film that I bat on about all the time, so I will cut it completely short because most people in the chat room has probably heard me mention this movie at least once, and it is very close to getting vaulted now, I think. It's very close for me, which is Wreck.
Wreck
is just...
I thought you were going Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. No. Look, Wreck is one of those films. It's overseas. I tried to keep my overseas to a minimum in this, but look, it's just amazing in the fact that it is terrifying. It works perfectly. It's what Cloverfield should have been, in my opinion. It's a brilliant use of an over-the-shoulder camera, and like 90% of it's done in big, long, one takes kind of things. And... look, it's terrifying, and the last 10 minutes of that film will always make my skin crawl. It's just, I don't actually know how someone can watch that bit of that film and just not feel really, really terrified. It's just amazing, so you have to see it.
Fantastic. All right, so my number one, and the reason why I rushed you along before, Josh, was because my number one on the Geek Fanboy list, and really it could go on either of these lists, but just for the Geek Fanboy list, action-adventure category. Now, I don't put it into the horror category. It is an adventure film, is Jaws. Because I think that there are actually people out there, my sister included, who still have not seen Jaws. My sister actually refuses to watch it. She goes, oh, it looks stupid, right? This film changed the face of cinema. This film is a film that everybody must see. Forget the sequels. Forget all of that. This is a film, Steven Spielberg's second feature film. People are going to say, oh, but what about Duel? And I'll say Duel was made for television. This was his second feature film after Sugarland Express. He not only created a film that has so much tension and made everybody afraid of the beach, and as you say, it still affects you today. You think that, I mean, he basically made sharks a mythological creature. He basically made them this concept of something that is terrifying. I actually think
it's one step further than that. It actually, it will make you look at water differently your entire life. Any water that you can't see the bottom of, you fear what's down there, and it's all because of that.
I have a problem with the beach, and I'll be first to admit it. I don't mind going to the beach, and I'm not phobic about the beach, but I have a problem with the beach. I have a problem, and I think some of it does come from Jaws. I have a problem with not being able to see under the water. I have a problem with not being able to see what's down there.
Yeah.
And the fact that there could be enormous fish with giant teeth really is not something that I like. I like going to a pool, quite frankly. I'm not a huge fan of the beach. I don't mind waves and so forth. But yeah, no, I got to say, sharks do really do terrify me. And I'm sure it is because of this film. But where Jaws not only terrified us about the beach and made us a great shark, it is a film that is universally well made. This is the film that has three standout performances from three brilliant actors. It has a great script. And the film is amazingly shot. And what started as an accident turned into being one of the most famous things about the film, which was that you don't even see the shark for the first three quarters of the film. It started as an accident because the shark didn't work. But then Spielberg started to incorporate that into the film to say, it is scarier not knowing what it looks like and not knowing what's under the surface, and played on that. And it works so well. And once again, like Psycho, we all know the music. That music is an Academy Award-winning score, and we all know it, quite frankly.
No, absolutely.
Any list that I do about films that people must see, Jaws goes on. It is actually one of my favorite films of all time.
Absolutely.
And I think it is still to this day, even with the rubber shark, still today, one of the greatest films ever
made. Dude, I'm sorry, but if you've ever seen a great white, and I have, they look like that. Yes. Like, they are. They're just so big and so, like, so fast and so long. They look plastic.
Yeah, and something about sharks breaching is phenomenal.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we see it jump out of the water at the end of Jaws, spoilers for Jaws, but there are photos out there and video out there where you actually see great whites breaching, and it is a terrifying sight to see these big things coming out of the water. Okay, the film, we're actually running over, so I'll rush this along. Film School Critic, number one must-see film, I think, is going to be a film that a lot of people haven't seen, and the reason why I put it there was because it is a very important film. It is actually a Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert film from the 20s. It is actually called It Happened One Night. Now, the reason why I'm putting this film on there is because this film set the tone and the pace for all romantic comedies to come. So this is it's one of those screwball comedies. The two people meet on the road and they fall in love. And, you know, we've seen this film a million times. This is the film that set it up. Yeah. And also, it is only one of three films in history to have ever won the Grand Slam at the Oscars. It won best actor, best actress, best writer, best director, best film. Only three films have ever done that. That film, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Silence of the Lambs. And to be the first film to have ever done that is also staggering. It is exceptionally funny, and it is amazing because who knew Clark Gable had a sense of humor?
Exactly.
He was the Tom Selleck of his day.
Oh, yes.
We only ever think of him as Gone with the Wind, and he was actually so much more than that. Now, I do actually happen to have two honorary mentions I want to throw out really quickly. First of all, in my list of five movies you must see from the Geek Fanboy, I didn't have a horror category, you may have noticed. So I do have a horror as an honorary mention. Mm. And I think the horror from the 1970s, actually, which had a lot of cultural significance and should be seen, as The Exorcist. I think The Exorcist still terrifies people to this day. It still has some very, very disturbing images in it, and it should be seen. And honorable mentions on the film critic side of things is the only color film on this list, but I think in the sci-fi category, the film that set the pace for all of this and the film that really kind of inspired things like Star Wars and stuff to come is 2001: A Space Odyssey by Stanley Kubrick. Mm. Now, I know I don't think you're a fan of 2001. Fan or not,
yeah,
technically, the film was groundbreaking.
Mm.
And in 1969, when that film came out, nothing like it had been done before. Mm. And Stanley Kubrick and Arthur C. Clarke deserve a lot of credit, and Douglas Trumbull for doing the visual effects, mm, for making something that was impossible to do possible. And that without 2001, we would not have had Close Encounters, we would not have had Star Wars, we would not have had any of this stuff.
Yeah,
so a lot has to be paid homage to that film. All right, that's the list. And a question came up in the chat room before, where do we find these lists? We post our lists in our forum after the show, sometimes a few hours after the show, sometimes the next day, but they will eventually go, and you'll see under the podcast category, under film, actually, you'll see there is actually a category open for lists of five.
Mm.
And what we encourage is, after our list has gone up, try not to jump the gun and put it up before we get our list up, which is what happened last week, because we like to try and have our list as like the start, the kickstart. If you have a list of five that you want to put up about this particular category, once we've posted our list of five, you are welcome to put up your films as alternatives to our lists, because it helps people. The idea is that we've put out a list that we think you should watch. These are films you guys can go out and have a look at. And if you guys have put films on there, I noticed The Princess Bride came up a couple of times. Great film.
Absolutely.
And just because it wasn't on my list doesn't mean it isn't a great film. There's just other films that I had on there already.
Mm-hmm.
But put that on your list, by all means, because it is a film that people should be aware of. Also, our opening clip, if you know what that opening clip is, put it into the forum. Once again, under the Film Actually podcast, you'll actually see that there is a thread open for the podcasts themselves, and we encourage you to try and guess what that opening clip was, okay, and what film that comes from. Better luck this week, absolutely. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say on Film Actually today, disagree or agree with our reviews, or you have a request for a list of five, we actually have another request. We'll bring that up next week.
Yeah.
Geek Betty has put in a request for a list of five. We'll save that for next week. Geek Betty, if you're listening, we haven't ignored you. I just got the list a bit late. So we put those, send us feedback. That's what I'm trying to say. Isn't that what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to say that.
I think you're trying to say that. Feedback, I'm not sure what you're trying to say right
feedback
now.
feedback@geekactually.com is our, sorry, I'm a bit discombobulated because I'm using a laptop today, which I wasn't using for the last couple of weeks, and it doesn't have a touch screen. all right, so disagree, agree, feedback@geekactually.com, or we have a voicemail line. You can drop us a line at 02, Sydney number, 02-8011-3167, or if you're international, you can always just use the Skype address Geek Actually, which is our Geek Skype ID. Okay, you can buy Cafe Press type swag, t-shirts, mugs, stuff like that, at cafepress.com.au/geekactually, and you can follow our fan page at facebook.com/geekactually. Make sure you do check out our other shows. We have a tech show that goes out, Tech Actually, which is now being out after this one. We've kind of rearranged the times a little bit. And we also do an after show. And you can watch all of this live as of 12 p.m. every Saturday. We start with now Film Actually, then Tech Actually, then the after show. And we record all shows back to back, and we have a chat room that you can come. You go to geekactually.com/live. We do have a couple of things we want to push. First of all, Josh, I believe you have something you want to push. Celine?
Right. Okay, cool. I wasn't sure which one you meant. I was like, if he throws up a slide and I talk about something else, it's going to look really stupid.
Yeah, no.
Celine, who you will all know from the show, and some of you may have seen it if you have her on Facebook at the moment. Celine and I have finally launched her website, which is live now, godhaspinkhair.com. If you guys head over there, you can see all of her artwork at the moment. As Dave has put up on the site, she is currently doing her final What would you call it, Dave?
It's her graduation exhibition.
Exactly. And her work is up at the Carriage Works, which you can find the links to on Geek Actually.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, if you'd like to have a look at some of the other stuff she's done and just some of the images that are up there, feel free to jump on and check it out. It's
I do encourage you also to go and have a look at, if you are in Sydney, go to Carriage Works. It's free, and it does run until Monday. So you actually have a little bit of time. This podcast will come out. You should still have about a day or so to go see it. Go see the artwork. It is quite good. Celine did some amazing work. You can see a photograph of it on the site, and go to her site and you can see even more photographs. I'm kind of also tied to this because I helped take the photographs. So, and it's a wonderful exhibition. So do have a look at it. She's a very talented young lady.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
While you're plugging, do you want to plug you?
RawDLC.com is, of course, the gaming website that I also do. If you guys haven't been there before, we are a gaming website. We also have a podcast which goes out at Tuesdays at 8 p.m. live, very similar to this situation. And, of course, we have a bunch of interesting stuff. We have a Harden Up video, which will be dropping soon, which is us running up and down a beach. It's a lot funnier than it sounds because we're all nerds, and that's really, really a hard thing to do. And, of course, we have an exclusive interview that we had with Matt Webster from Need for Speed coming up next week as well, which will be a video interview. So that'll be on the site very soon.
Fantastic. All right. Also, remember that we also have a couple friends out there. Now, I'm going to start with Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. It's a movie podcast like us, but they drink tequila, so it's a lot of fun to listen to. You can find them at weekendronan.com or search for them on iTunes. They haven't had a new episode out for a couple of weeks, but I did Twitter him, and he says there is a new one coming. So they're going to get one out. Now, the reason why I put them first this time is because Movie Fan House is changing. Now, at the moment, moviefanhouse.com still works, and they do the Movie Fan Cast, the Talking Dead Cast, and Right This Instant. But they are actually launching a new site, which is live now. You can go have a look at it, called Rebound Radio. Radio.com, and they've got more podcasts. It looks like they've collaborated with other people and stuff like that. And it's kind of a neat looking site. Brad's doing the whole site, so go have a look at Rebound Radio and get involved with their site over there. They're doing pretty good. Also, we want to quick shout out to Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He did our artwork for us, and he's always good value. And he has a lot of other artwork you can go have a look at while you're there. One last thing before we get out of here is I just want to very quickly plug the David Storm's America Tour. We kind of have stalled on donations. Just to remind people that we're still trying to raise the money to send me over to the States to try and talk to some of the bigger guys in podcasting and try and get awareness of what we're doing over here to try and break into that American market. If you are interested in donating any money to, and for those who have donated already, thank you so much. You guys are wonderful. For those who are interested in donating, go to the front page of geekactually.com. You'll see it up on the sidebar on the right-hand side of the page. Left-hand side of the page? Facing it, it's your right-hand side. that actually says David Storms America, and you can donate right there via PayPal. And hopefully, if all goes well and we can get the money together, we're trying to get over there January, February 2011. Might be a little bit later than that now because the donations have kind of slowed down, and it is approaching Christmas time, I understand. Okay, so it will be an ongoing thing. It's not like, oh, well, it's January, we can't do it anymore. It's just I'm trying to do it sooner rather than later, but we will just keep this thing going for a while. Okay, I think that's it. I think we're done. I have nothing else to add. No more clips, no more things, no more that. No.
Nope.
Okay, as usual on this show, we like to go out with a piece of music from one of the films we've reviewed. This week is no different. I have a little bit of the soundtrack from Fair Game for you to have a listen to. So we'll go out on that, and we'll go out with our customary saying, which is, in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and you've got a whole list of them now. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week. Bye now.